Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking.
And welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I am your host, Jonathan Ragus, and alongside me, as always, Mike McShane. How you doing, pal?
Real good, Jonathan. Real good. For a Friday? Absolutely.
Yes.
Friday during
Everybody
the holiday week.
Friday.
Yep. Holiday week. Another holiday coming up next week. So.
Yeah. And you know what? There's still a lot of people off today, and I hope that they're in here listening to Fan Junkies Radio.
Absolutely.
We have
Absolutely.
A lot of things to talk about today, Mike. It's going to be a pretty action-packed show here. Before we start talking things, there's going to be a lot of controversy we're going to talk about,
yep.
Firings, potential retirements.
Yep.
Just basically your run-of-the-mill stuff, but for everything. I mean, we're going to touch topics on all sports, I think, right?
Yeah, it might be one of those shows. We've done a few of those where we're going to be talking just about every single sport, for sure.
Yes, and it's going to happen. So, but before we do that, the number is 347-237-5373. Give us
yep.
a call and, let us know what you think about some of the things we're going to be talking about here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Give us a holler and call in, man, because I'm, as you pointed out, Jonathan, some of the things are controversial, so I'm sure people have their opinions on some of these things.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there was. You know what? Just from taking to Twitter yesterday and reading everybody's tweets, yeah, everybody's going to have something to say. So, let's dive into NBA first, Mike.
Okay.
We have a habit here on Fan Junkies Radio of talking about coaches who could lose their jobs
mm-hmm.
and end up losing their job as soon as we go off the air. Mike Brown being an example of that.
We're the kiss of death.
Here's a coach we never spoke about because who knew his job was even in danger of being lost?
Yeah.
And that's Brooklyn Nets head coach Avery Johnson, who was fired yesterday with the team sitting at 14-14, a 500 win record, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's put it out here first. There's a lot of things going down in Brooklyn, Mike. They got Deron Williams. They bring in Joe Johnson. Re-signed Gerald Wallace. You got a couple of good players, but this isn't really a superstar-loaded roster, Mike. It's a mediocre roster at best.
Yeah.
With a, I guess you could say with a bench that is probably one of the worst in the NBA.
Okay.
There's really nobody on this bench that comes out and could be a game changer. The Knicks have a J.R. Smith. Last year Oklahoma City had a James Harden. There's nobody like that on the Brooklyn Nets bench. And now here you go. Avery Johnson gone. What does it automatically turn into? Deron Williams is in Brooklyn. Coach killer. He killed Jerry Sloan's career in Utah. Now he killed Avery Johnson's career in Brooklyn, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's basically coming down to. Now, to me, go ahead, shoot.
I was going to say that, I hear where you're coming from, but that sounds a little bit simplistic to me.
It's not, because I'm going to throw this out there right away. I was going to get into this in a little bit. I'm going to throw it out there right away. The NBA, when you have a superstar-loaded roster, and supposedly Brooklyn thinks they do because they have Joe Johnson and Deron Williams.
Uh-huh.
If you are not above 500, and we saw that already,
yes.
Mike Brown being fired instantly, the coach is going to get hacked. There's no room for patience anymore in the NBA with these superstar-loaded rosters.
Mm-hmm.
Already, we have reports coming out. Deron Williams totally quit on Avery Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You had Gerald Wallace throwing out comments about the Brooklyn Nets, that it's disgusting the way they're playing because they won, I think, 3 out of their last 12 games or 13 games or something like that, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So automatically, as soon as a player throws out a comment, the coach's job is already in jeopardy.
Right, right.
And here we go again.
Well, all right, let's break this down for a moment. First of all, there was, if I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of expectation when that team immediately moved over to Brooklyn.
Yes.
A lot of expectation.
Well, I mean, listen, you're coming into the house of where the Mecca is, Madison Square Garden, and this is a city that will always be a New York Knicks city.
Right.
So, of course, there's going to be high expectations. They're going to want to win instantly.
Okay. And they were doing that in their first 15 games. In fact, they went 11-4.
Okay.
They've gone 3-10 in their last 13. All right. Now, you know, one of the things I pointed out, and, you know, I pointed it out on Wednesday, and I pointed it out numerous times since the beginning of the NBA season. Christmas has passed, and as a result, I will begin to start following the NBA more and more and more. However, you've been following it from the beginning.
Yes.
Jonathan, you got to answer me this question.
Shoot.
11-4 on the front end, and suddenly that team goes 3-10?
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, I'm going to be looking at what's going on myself.
Oh, yeah.
What in the world happened here from 11-4 to 3-10?
Yeah. So something definitely did happen, Mike.
Right.
But, unfortunately, it went on the shoulders of Avery Johnson. It didn't go on the shoulders of, let's say, a Deron Williams, who is the, you know, is the guy running this offense, and his shooting percentage was just miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And what's Avery Johnson going to do? You know he's not going to bench Deron Williams, because you know that he's already going to lose his job right there if he does.
Well, absolutely.
You know, Jay-Z, Prokhorov, all these guys, they have a lot riding on Deron Williams, thinking that he's going to be the next best thing in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
His shooting percentage, miserable. Miserable, Mike.
Right.
So,
I still ask the question, something went very, very wrong someplace recently.
And
what was that thing that went wrong?
And I'm going to tell you right now.
Because you're not going to go 11-4 on the front end and then all of a sudden drop 10 of your last 13.
They were riding that high coming into Brooklyn. The high started to wear off. As the high started to wear off, you had guys like Joe Johnson, Deron Williams chucking up shots. And, you know, you did have a center in Brooks Lopez who was playing good. Avery Johnson had Brooks Lopez playing the best basketball of his career. You can't question that.
Mm-hmm.
Shaquille O'Neal last night on TNT for one of the games comes out and he says, you know, sometimes before great players point fingers, they should look in the mirror. This is the first time I've ever heard the guy with the ball at all times say that he doesn't like the offense. My advice for Deron Williams is to look in the mirror and see that he's, you know, if he's doing enough. At times, I think he's trying to do too much. There are only 24 seconds on the shot clock, and he spends 12 seconds of that dribbling between his legs. He needs to get everyone else involved and himself involved. He is not playing good basketball.
Okay, well, we've talked about this sort of thing before, you know, these guys that are out there being the prima donnas. But nonetheless, all right, Jonathan, I'm just asking you to put on your owner hat for a moment.
Absolutely.
You see, you got a team 11-4 on the front end. Suddenly, you're going 3-10 in your last 13.
Yeah.
Do you make a move or do you not? I mean,
something's freaking ridiculous, Mike.
Something's got to be done. You got to do something.
Something has to be done, but that's when you go up to you have a sit down with the head coach and say, "What's going on with this roster? Why did we win so many games and now we're in a 3-10 slump? What's going on?" I don't care who it was, who it has been, how many years it's been. I have never, ever seen head coaches like Mike Brown and Avery Johnson get fired for losing a few games.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Yep.
You were at 14-14. If they were at 0-14 to start the season off, I could see them making a move.
Right.
At a 500 record with the season still very young,
mm-hmm.
them firing a very good coach in Avery Johnson – I think was the most disgusting and most disgraceful move the Brooklyn Nets could have done. Period.
Okay.
You've never, ever seen an NBA coach get fired for going 3-10 in the last 13 games. You've never seen that.
Well, it's
right out of the get-go with so much writing on this team. And I'm telling you, that's it. It's so much writing on this team with a roster with a guy like Deron Williams on it. That is what cost Avery Johnson his job. And
well,
the great thing about this is that Avery Johnson's son hit the Twitter yesterday to say this stuff.
I read his comments.
Outrage.
Yeah, I read his comments. And,
yeah.
and again, look, I understand. I defer to you on this because of the fact that, obviously, as I pointed out before, you got your ear to the ground on it.
Basketball.
You got your ear to the ground on it more than I do. However, looking at it cosmetically, all right, just looking at it on the face of it, it seems to me there's more to this story than what we have heard up to this point. There's something internally wrong when you've got a team that comes out and plays as well as they did in the beginning of the season and then all of a sudden falls on their face.
Okay, so Avery Johnson could coach the team to play great, but now when guys like Deron Williams aren't making open shots, Their shooting percentages are terrible, and they're holding on to the ball instead of passing the ball. It's automatically the coach's fault.
Well, no, but we see this. But we see this in all sports, Jonathan. We see this in football as well.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the coach is always going to be the one.
Mixing it up. He was taking players off the bench, trying to stick them into the starting lineup. He was trying to see what fit and what was going wrong. So he was in the process of trying to fix this problem.
Sure.
One of the main problems, though, is Deron Williams shooting 39% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the guy who you're going through to be an offensive playmaker and also to be an offensive scorer, Mike.
Right, sure.
That big guy is shooting 39% from the field. A coach can't change that, Mike.
Well,
and they're not. And usually a coach trying to change that is benching the player and giving him time to rest and get his collective thoughts going. You're not going to see Avery Johnson bench Deron Williams in Brooklyn's first season.
No, you're not, because of the pressure. Because of the pressure that's going to be placed on him to make sure that he's playing. I understand all of that.
Exactly. So what does he do? You know, and at the same time, you got Joe Johnson shooting 37% from three-point land, and he's supposed to be a three-point scorer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are just not making open shots. Avery Johnson's son said it yesterday. He goes, "I'm sorry, our best players on the team couldn't make open shots. Yes, that is my father's fault totally."
Right, right.
But at the same time, you're not going to instantly trade Deron Williams.
No.
You're not going to turn around and get somebody stupid enough to take Joe Johnson's contract. And you're also not going to put those two players on the bench and play Jerry Stackhouse over them. So, unfortunately, Avery Johnson's contract was easier to get rid of than anybody else's.
But, again, I go back to what I just said. That is always the case. That's always going to be the case. I don't care what sport it is.
Yeah.
It's easier to remove one person who is the face, you know, the coaching face.
In their first season, with a mediocre roster, you can easily fire a very, very good NBA coach that quick. After coming off the Mike Brown stuff, Mike.
Listen, and I'm on record that I thought that one was ridiculous. I thought what made that one so ridiculous was the timing of it, how early it was in the season.
Right here.
You know, and I understand what you're saying. Okay, it's 28 games in. All right? All right, and there's still
time. Early in the season. If they were doing this slide and it was closer to the All-Star break, right after the All-Star break, I could see them.
Right.
Doing this move.
Right.
I just don't see them doing it this early in the season.
Okay, but then, see, what it sounds like you're trying to tell me here is that there was a conscious effort to move this guy out of here.
Yes, absolutely. There was a reason why they got rid of Avery Johnson yesterday. And was it because Deron Williams was chirping in the Nets organization year? Was another player doing it? I mean, come on. Listen. Avery Johnson is a very, very good NBA coach. You saw him do very good jobs with the Dallas Mavericks. He was a good assistant coach. This guy is one of the better coaches in the league, and now he's unemployed today. For
right,
what?
Right, right, right.
For
and I take nothing.
You're going to bring in, and then let's talk about the potential candidates to replace Avery Johnson. PJ Carlissimo is now the interim coach of the Brooklyn Nets.
Mm-hmm.
What is PJ Carlissimo going to do? I mean, no matter where P.J. Carlissimo has been, he lost his job. You know what I mean, Mike?
Sure.
He hasn't been a very effective NBA coach.
Sure.
In fact, he goes after players so hard that he ended up getting choked out by Latrell Sprewell.
Okay. Let's go back.
Now, he's just the interim coach. Don't get me wrong. He's just the interim coach. But if you knew you were going to fire Avery Johnson, wouldn't it have been smart for you to start lining up candidates before you did that, instead of having a PJ Carlissimo run the show?
Well, that's why I'm saying I think there's more to this story than what we've been told up to this point. Because obviously it sounds like it was a rather shotgun sort of mentality. You know, that's what it sounds like to me. Something went wrong somewhere. And so the reaction was, all right, this has got to be,
you know what,
this has got to be changed right now.
Wallace, you had comments from Deron Williams. I mean, you know, come on, man. You know, Prokhorov. He brought the Nets into Brooklyn. He brought them into the Barclays, and all he has done since then was talk trash.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
The best team in the city. No, you are not, man. You aren't even a part of this city yet. You may be playing in Brooklyn, but you are not New York City. That belongs to the Knicks. And until the Brooklyn Nets actually do something and win something, it still won't happen. They'll end up still having to share New York City with the Knicks.
All right, if we go back to... if we go back to and I think it's a, I think it's a good analogy. Let's go back to the Lakers situation.
Yeah.
And when you and I talked about that one way back a number of weeks ago, we generally came up with the belief, let's put it that way, that in fact Kobe had an awful lot to do with that.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Similar situation. Yeah. Your indication here is that Deron Williams had an awful lot to do with this one.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, if that's the case, Jonathan,
if it wasn't Deron Williams saying anything, it was his play.
What you're telling me is that it was a purposeful situation on Williams' part not to play his best in order to have this kind of situation occur.
We saw him sulk in Utah. What happened? It basically forced one of the best NBA coaches ever to resign and to go into retirement.
All right. Now, if you've got a player who just isn't going to respond to you or isn't going to work with you,
yeah.
What is the ownership? What is the management of the team to do but to remove the coach? What are you going to do?
I mean, we've seen
you can't remove the player.
The coach, Mike.
You can't remove the player, though, Jonathan. You just said it yourself.
But that has nothing to do with this. I mean, listen, this happened in Utah. And what happened is that no matter – Sloan still resigned, but they ended up still getting rid of Deron Williams for next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Utah's got nothing now because of Deron Williams.
Right.
You know, they lost their legendary coach, and they lost their best player.
Okay.
And in return, they got nothing.
Right. Right.
So, I'm sorry. Like I said, I blame this being on the superstar-studded rosters, and there's no patience in the NBA anymore for coaches.
Well, I'm a prime
example.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just go back to my question, and that is, what are you to do? That's all.
No, of course. I mean, what are you doing? I said it right from the beginning. The coach's contract is going to be the easiest to get rid of.
Obviously.
But that doesn't make it any less disgraceful. It doesn't. And this was a disgraceful, embarrassing move by the Brooklyn Nets yesterday.
Okay.
Let's get to a call. We have somebody on the line here.
I think it's probably Joey.
732, how you doing?
What's going on, man?
Big Joe.
Hey, hello? It's Jose from New Jersey. How you guys doing?
All right, Jose. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Just want to make a quick comment on this situation. And, you know, you're right. He did push out Jerry Sloan in Utah, one of the most legendary coaches in NBA history. And you know what? And you know, he can deny it all he wants. He did. He was responsible for why Avery Johnson is unemployed. I think it's the lack of patience. You're right. It's the lack of patience at the NBA for coaches nowadays. Because you know, you have somebody. You know. Nobody was complaining about the system a month ago when they were 11-4 and he won Coach of the Year. Now it's like, okay, well, you know, we're struggling a little bit. Okay, well, I can't play in the system, blah, 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 blah. And, you know what, as a result, the coach gets fired. And I think it's a bunch of bull, to be honest with you.
Actually, you know what? You brought that up as well. Avery Johnson won the NBA Coach of the Month in October and November.
Right.
That's another thing we forgot to mention.
Right.
And, Jose, you make a very good point. Nobody was complaining about the play. Nobody's complaining about the system not even a month ago. Less than a month ago.
But, see, okay. Well, no, who's going to complain when you're 11-4? Obviously, okay?
Absolutely.
The question is what happened while they were going 3-10.
Okay, but here's the thing. Coach of the Month, October. Coach of the Month, November. Unemployed line, December. I mean, Mike, it's all there. It was a disgusting move. But like we said, the coach's contract is going to be the easier one to get rid of, and you're not going to get rid of a star player.
Right.
You know. But it doesn't make it any less disgraceful, Mike. It doesn't. It doesn't, especially this early in the season.
I'm not denying that, but I'm just saying, what other option do you have? What other option is there? There isn't one.
The sinking ship, which is his job as an NBA coach. And he had them playing great basketball for 2 months.
Right.
You have a bad half a month and you get rid of the guy. So Jose, who do you think is going to take over in Brooklyn?
Well, I think my guess would be Nate McMillan, but they're talking to Phil Jackson, and Phil Jackson is known to take over situations where he knows he's going to win, not these, you know, rebuilding projects or anything. I think most likely is leaning towards Nate McMillan. I don't know who else is out there. Possibly, I don't know. It looks like Nate McMillan.
Yeah, well, that's actually was my choice was Nate McMillan to take over this team. I think he's the best coach for this situation. You got guys out there like Mike Dunleavy, Phil Jackson out there, but Phil Jackson's not going to Brooklyn.
No, I don't see it. I don't see that happening either.
It's not going. All right, Jose, thanks for calling there, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. Guys, take care.
All right, take care.
Listen, Phil Jackson is not going to Brooklyn. If he didn't go back to L.A. where he knew he could win, especially with Dwight Howard there, Steve Nash there, he's not going to Brooklyn.
No, I would agree with you. Frankly, I've become a little fatigued with the Phil Jackson chatter anyhow, anytime there's an opening.
Yeah, I just don't even think Phil Jackson will end up even coaching the NBA again.
I don't either. I truly don't. Like I said, it just gets to me, it gets tiring.
Listen, if indeed he asked for some stake in ownership of the Lakers on top of everything else to come back, Prokhorov and these guys, Jay-Z and all,
they're not going with that. No.
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 No, because there's so many owners already.
Right.
Just to get them in there, the Ratners and whoever else. I mean, come on. Everybody's got a stake in the Brooklyn Nets. They're not going to give Phil Jackson because it's going to end up being Phil Jackson's team. It's not going to be Prokhorov's team. Jay-Z is going to be sitting on the sidelines and, they're going to be saying, who cares? It's Phil Jackson's team and this is not what they want. So.
Right, right. I agree with you.
Like I said, it doesn't make it any less disgraceful, Mike.
I hear you.
And listen, the rumors of Jerry Sloan going to Brooklyn now have me laughing.
Oh, well, I'm sure. I don't know, who would realistically think that's going to happen?
Oh, believe it or not, there's been a lot of people out there, a lot of Brooklyn Nets fans talking about, they should go and hire Jerry Sloan, which made me automatically say, you probably just became an NBA fan just a couple of months ago when Brooklyn got a team. Because if you don't know the history between Deron Williams and Jerry Sloan, if you don't even know who Jerry Sloan is,
right,
he's not going to Brooklyn.
Right.
This
exactly.
is not his type of team to coach.
Right.
Not. Like I said, Nate McMillan, my prediction, he'll be the next Brooklyn Nets coach. Unless they end up keeping P.J. Carlissimo if he does a good job. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But
I hear you.
That's my side of the story, Mike.
I got you. I got you.
Because a second-place team in the NBA just fired their head coach yesterday.
If it's evident that you've got a situation where you've got a player or players that have gone renegade on you, I don't know what other solution you have, Jonathan. That's my only point.
Jeez, man. Then Rex Ryan really needs to be fired, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, let's get it straight. That's part of what we've heard down here in Philly with regard to Andy Reid, that the guys have just stopped responding to him. And if that's the case, what are you going to do? You're going to get rid of the naysayers out there? You're going to get rid of the mercenaries that aren't playing the game to their fullest potential? Or are you going to get somebody in there that those players are going to respond to?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's my only point with this whole thing is, if in fact the handwriting is on the wall, if you've got the information out there that one of your players, your star player in Deron Williams is not going to be a team player, well, then what else are you going to do? You don't have a solution.
Yeah.
Right?
The funny part of that is, man, I get a kick out of this. Everybody's trying to take the side and sidestep and say, well, Melo is a coach killer too. Yeah. Well, guess what? George Karl is still coaching in Denver.
Well, yeah.
And guess what? Brooklyn, Deron Williams, coaches axe 2, NBA championship 0 on his resume. So enjoy that. Let's talk about a couple of games from last night, Mike. Clippers defeated the Celtics 106-77. Clippers 15th straight win, Mike.
Yeah, we were talking about him a little bit the other day. Just an amazing story. It really is. And you had looked up the record on that, so they're one step closer.
Yeah, 23-6 on the season, now 14-3 at home.
15 straight, that is just absolutely incredible to me.
Yeah,
absolutely incredible.
You know what, everybody on this team is just playing good. And once again, one of my favorite role players in the league, Jamal Crawford, 17 points last night off the bench.
There you go.
You know what, they're not getting scoring from DeAndre Jordan, really, 7 points last night. They're not even getting scoring from Chris Paul, who had a bad night, 8 points. Still had 11 assists. Willie Green, former Philadelphia 76er, you know him well, Mike.
Yep.
Still in that starting spot there. 9 points, 3 for 4 again from 3-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you like to have that in the sex, in the, on the Sixers right now?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are a lot of things I'd like to have over on the Sixers, trust me.
Yeah, and it's not Andrew Bynum's needs. All right, another game from last night. You know what? Another phenomenal team in the league, Oklahoma City Thunder, now 22-6 on the season. Beat the Mavericks 111-105 in OT last night. You know what? You got to say, Mavericks 12-17, but they're really trying to step in there and fight, Mike.
Yeah, but OKC just is amazing to me. I mean, you know, there was a lot of – I remember when we were last season. Of course, you know, it's difficult to do a comparison to last year's season because it was shortened.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a lot of speculation that OKC was kind of a flash in the pan last year.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh. They're for real.
No, and this is without James Harden on the team now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Kevin Martin, who they got for James Harden, you know, not having a great year, but 18 points off the bench last night.
Yep.
Don't care who you got. You got Serge Ibaka in the middle. 17 rebounds, 5 blocks.
Yep.
Kevin Durant, 40 points. You got 40. A player like Kevin Durant on your team, you're going to be one of the better teams in the league.
Yep, absolutely.
To me, Kevin Durant is probably the best player in the league because the guy just plays through everything, Mike.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
You know, the whole LeBron talk or whatever. Kevin Durant plays the game. He plays it quiet. He plays no matter what the coach tells him to do. This is the type of player you want on your team.
Couldn't agree with you more. Russell Westbrook last night, 16 points. And Kevin Martin, 18.
Yeah, Kevin Martin.
OKC is for real. Yeah. I had my doubts about him last season as well. I kind of bought into that belief that, you know, maybe they were just a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. This team is for real. Like 22-6. Let's see. Is that the best record in the – No. The Clippers have the best record. But they're right there. OKC is right there.
Yeah, they're right there. You know, Spurs, too.
Yes.
You know, if you look at the standings, and wow, Spurs.
Yep.
The ageless Spurs. Yeah, so 23-6. Then you got the Spurs and Oklahoma City Thunder at 22 wins apiece. And right behind them, the New York Knicks, 21-8. I'm happy.
Right. Yep.
Great stuff. All right, NHL now, Mike. Got to talk about this. We didn't talk about NHL for a couple of shows here because we're both just tired of it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you're tired, aren't you?
I'm so fatigued with it. You know, I got talking to a guy on the street literally this morning because I was out wearing my Flyers jacket, which...
Why?
Listen, let me get...
Was that the only jacket you had today, Mike?
Actually, it's a utility situation, yes. It's a very, very, very warm jacket. And, but anyhow, a guy on the street stops me and he says, you know, talking to me about the whole NHL situation, I just kind of shook my head and just... I said, dude, I'm just really fatigued with it.
Yeah, that was a great thing, man. I was at Chula Theater in Jersey, which is a sci-fi and horror convention. So I can, you know, I like to go meet some of the older stars and, you know, see the vendors and stuff and what's being sold. And a lot of guys walking around, Rangers jerseys on and all this other stuff. And, you know, of course I had to say something to them. I'm like, come on, man, why are you wearing that for? Seriously? Come on. Get it off, man. And that's the thing. I would like to see people just – put their NHL stuff away until it comes back, if it comes back.
Well, and I made a couple of points about that sort of thing. I mean, I made a point of saying there will be no hockey ornaments on the Christmas tree this year. So I've made my statement in some ways. However,
so on your private Christmas tree, which nobody sees, no NHL stuff, but you go out.
It's a utility thing. It's the warmest coat I have.
If somebody throws eggs at you, you just don't care if it gets dirty.
And listen, I needed a warm coat this morning. It was 32 degrees when I was out.
Yeah. Well, listen, Sidekick said he'll get you a new jacket. He said burn the jacket.
We got a new proposal that was put forth. The NHL owners put forth a new proposal.
Yeah.
last minute sort of thing. I mean, what we've already heard that, you know, they keep pushing the date back, but January 15 seems to be the drop dead date in order to get a CBA in place. And my opinion is even January 15, in my opinion, is way too late, because what kind of a season are you going to end up having, Jonathan? I don't even know if you can get 40 games in between January 15th and beginning of April?
No,
you can't get 40 games in.
Well, you know what? We spoke about that the last time. If you have a 40-game season, if you win a cup that season, does it actually count as a Stanley Cup win?
There you go. I brought that up, right. You know, somehow or another, it just kind of feels – it feels cheap to me.
Man, how great would it be if we see a bunch of teams go 20-20 and they're really screwed?
Oh, man.
Just don't know what to do.
It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if you had a bunch of teams go 20-20.
40 games, man. 40 games. Honestly, it's like it's like the NHL playing the NFL season. 40 games.
Yeah, but anyhow, you've got the details there, right, on this new proposal that apparently was put forth by the owners. And when was it put forth, Jonathan? Was it put forth today?
Last night it was put forward. Last night, a player who requests an anonymous, to be anonymous, doesn't want to know, doesn't want anybody to know that he's actually leaking this information out there. Basically said that they put this proposal out there, and Darren Dreger and Pierre LeBrun said that the new offer includes the make-whole provision that it stays at $300 million, allows each team one compliance buyout prior to the 13-14 season. The buyout would not count against the cap, but it would count against the player's share.
Mm-hmm.
The length of the agreement would still be 10 years with a mutual opt-out clause after 8 years, which the league maintains their desire to change the start of free agency from July 1st to July 10th.
Right.
The player says the new league offer still calls for the salary cap to be $60 million, which could be an issue when it comes to the escrow. So basically, here's the new thing, but it's still going to be at $60 million, which has been a problem from the beginning.
Right. And you and I, when we took a look at the details of this, everything else appeared to be, fair. Everything in this appears to be fair from what, if the report is accurate.
Yes.
But the bugaboo is the $60 million cap.
Yeah. So it's still...
And as soon as you and I heard that one, both of us, we both said the exact same thing at the exact same time. There's going to be the issue right there.
Listen, I'm not happy with the offer that was put forward because there's still nothing fixing the pot, the problem. And then Bill Daly comes out, Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News, a good friend of ours over on Ranger Nation, he comes out and says that Bill Daly just sent out an email statement confirming that the NHL has made an offer. And Daly says, and I quote, "We want to be back on the ice as soon as possible, but yet you don't do anything about the whole $60 million cap for the 13-14 season."
Right, right. I don't see how they're going to be able to maintain that demand. Not under the way things currently are.
No. I mean, Mike, honestly, you see the deal. I mean, if that's the exact deal that was offered to the NHL players yesterday, you look at it right there and say, well, NHL season's canceled.
Well, it's like I just said. Everything that is listed with regard to this particular proposal, in my mind, appears to be fair until you get to the $60 million cap. And when you get to that, anybody who's been following these negotiations as closely as you and I have been, and you and I think, have looked at almost every single proposal that's been put forth by either the owners or the NHLPA,
yeah.
As soon as we come to that one, we sit there and go, nope, this isn't going to fly.
No.
And I don't know how. I mean, really, when it comes right down to it, I don't know how they're going to reconcile that. If the owners are going to stand firm on that number, then this isn't going to change.
No, it's not going to change.
I think you could probably build into a CBA that – the cap would get to that point in future years, but you're not going to get that for the first year.
No, you're not. And all the stuff I'm reading today and hearing from other people inside of hockey saying, well, this deal offers the players a little bit of the flexibility that they wanted. But, I mean, if they're standing firm on that $60 million, I don't see how that offers any flexibility.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so, therefore, the guy that stopped me on the street today, he says to me, "Oh, do you hear that they put forth another proposal?" And I said, "No, I hadn't heard that." And I asked him what the details were. And of course, he's just a guy on the street, so no, he didn't know the details on it.
But that's the thing. See, like, it's these hockey fans. They don't even keep up with the news. That's what bothers me. Oh yeah, well, I heard that they offered another deal, whatever. And then all of a sudden, they start blaming people. No, you know what? Read into it and see exactly what the deal was. Who's it going to benefit? And then, and then point your fingers. Well, no, it's Bettman's fault. No, it's Donald Ferris' fault. No, it's Bill Daly's fault. No, it's the owner's fault. It's the player's fault, but yet they don't read about this. Well, I heard that they did a new offer. Okay, so what's the details of it?
I don't know.
Right. Okay, so he didn't know it. But, I mean, nonetheless, whether he knew what the details were or not, my reaction to him was, I'm not optimistic.
No.
And so, of course, once I got back in here this afternoon, and I sat down and took a look at what the details were, as I pointed out, you and I both came to the exact same conclusion that the thing that's going to hold this thing up is going to be the $60 million.
It's
going to
be canceled, Mike.
Yeah.
There's nothing going to happen. You're going to see Batman, Fair, and all the rest of the clowns pack themselves into a tiny Volkswagen and drive off into the sunset. Because
I agree with you. I for one, you know what, 2.5 months ago, I for one didn't believe that we'd be at this point. If you recall, I tried to stay as optimistic and as positive about the whole thing.
No, you did, but I wasn't positive about it because there was just no leeway being made by either side. It was always them throwing rocks at each other.
Right.
You know, pointing fingers. Oh, let's have another conference. Well, the owners did this. Okay, well, let's see the owners have a conference. Well, the players want this and they can get that. You know, there's just no, you know, in between with these people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, like I said.
So, well, I guess we'll wait and see. You know, I guess we can all hold
but
out.
But who the hell wants a 40-game season?
Well, again, see, I agree with you. You know, I'm almost at a point now. Yeah, I'm almost at a point now where I would almost prefer that they, in fact, actually cancel it because.
Well, thanks for coming on my side, Mike.
Yeah, only because at this point, like you say, I mean, look, let's just say for sake of argument. That this proposal miraculously goes through, okay? Yeah. And what's today's date? Today is December 28th. Okay. You're not getting any kind of ratification on this until sometime into the new year.
No.
All right? Which means you're not seeing real play. You are not going to see real play.
The middle of January, if you know.
If then.
Maybe even end.
Exactly.
You know?
And what are you going to have?
Season? Not even month and a half of the season, then all of a sudden playoffs? Come on.
Yeah, what, right, exactly. What are you going to have at that point?
Yeah.
How many games are you going to have? 30 games?
Yes.
I mean, I know. There's no point to that. There is no point to that. So, you know, I mean, I'll hold out a little bit of hope that maybe it gets resolved. But at the same time, I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, I haven't been optimistic. I just don't see it happening. I don't. Well, from one circus to another, Mike. But before we have a caller from the 856 area code 856. How you doing,
John? Mike, happy holidays. It's Jim Williams. How are you guys doing?
Hey,
Jim. How are you?
What's going on, buddy?
Doing well. You're talking NHL, or as I prefer to call it, the Battle of Flexing Nuts.
That's what it's been. A bunch of squirrels bending over and showing off their junk to each other, man.
Oh man.
Or lack thereof, as the case may be. I don't know why. Now games are canceled through the 14th. Why don't they just cancel the season outright at this point? They've lost the season when they lost the Winter Classic. I don't care what anybody says. That's the marquee event for the NHL.
Oh, absolutely.
Over the finals.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's just mind numbing. But
well, Jim, you know what? Let me throw this out to you because we threw this out to a bunch of people the last time. You know what? We took the Twitter and kind of went 50-50. 40-game season or even under a 40-game season, ridiculous for the NHL. If your team, the Flyers, goes on to win the Stanley Cup. Is that actually a Stanley Cup win?
Good question. Well, let's see. I'm going to be biased. No. Actually, I'm not going to be biased. It doesn't mean as much to me. In one respect, you could make a case, well, it was harder to win because you had a shorter season. But, no, I can't buy it. As much as I'd love to, I can't hold it with the same legitimacy as an 82-game season or even a 60-game season.
Agreed. And you know, I brought it up the other day, and it was just me out here thinking on my own, and I thought to myself, all right, let's just say for a moment there's a 40-game season. And like you, Jim, I'm a big Flyers fan. You know, I saw them win the Cup in 1974 and in 1975.
Whoa.
And I've been waiting since then for another Stanley Cup. And my thinking was, let's just say for a moment that the Flyers were to hit the ice and we play a 40-game season and the Flyers were to win the Stanley Cup this year. I'm not feeling real good about that, despite the fact I have waited, 35 plus years for a Stanley Cup. I'm not feeling real good about that.
It gets into that territory, and I hate to say it, it's an asterisk. It's an absolute asterisk.
Yeah, and is that something you would say, well, yeah, well, my Flyers won a cup or my Rangers won a cup last season? Yeah, but still, 40 games. And there's so many factors involved in that. So let's take my Rangers, for example. They lose a Henrik Lundqvist. He gets injured in this 40-game season. There is a potential in an 82-game season that somebody can come back halfway in that season and really guide a team to a very strong winning record, get them into the playoffs, and go from there. In a 40-game season, that's not there.
No, you're absolutely right. We've seen exactly the kind of scenario, Jonathan, that you're talking about. We've seen that before.
Yes.
One other aspect of this all is there are certain men, but there are many players who are playing across the pond in Europe, Eastern Europe, and what have you. Some of them don't have opt-out clauses. So even if the season were to come back, you're not going to see the NHL as nature intended, for lack of better terms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's honestly
it needs to be canceled because there's really
there's
no benefit to everyone to have a 40 game season.
It, well, exactly. Donald Fair strikes again.
Let me throw out a question for discussion for a moment.
Sure.
Let's say for sake of argument that, you know, the new year comes rolling around, it's early January, and the word comes down from Gary Bettman and maybe even the NHL Players Association that, in fact, that's it. We're canceling the season. Done. All right. Now, there's still no CBA in place. Do we feel that would give them sufficient amount of time to put a CBA into place prior to a season starting in September?
You know what?
In other words, what assurances do we have that we're going to even see hockey come September?
None. But here's the thing. Now, they'll be working for a new CBA for over an entire year, Mike.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Hold on, Jonathan. They didn't start working on this one until August.
No, but I'm saying, okay, August. So now if they don't get a CBA and there's no season next year or it goes into next season, that is over a year that they're having communications over a new CBA.
Oh, I hear you. But my question for conversation is, by canceling the season, we still do not have any assurance. And in fact, if anything, I think it slows the pace down for conversation and negotiation to begin.
Honestly... You know what? Go ahead, Jim.
I'm sorry, John. Well, I absolutely agree, Mike. I mean, there's something to be said for a sense of urgency. And there's a sense of urgency, whether it's actually being shown and put forth or not, is highly questionable.
Yeah.
But if they cancel the season outright, you know, where's the sense of urgency? They can just go back and, go on the beach and so on and so forth while the hardworking people at the arenas and the hardworking people who work seasonally are without a job, without money, and they're the real victims of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So. You know what? You're going to have a bunch of opinions on that. I have one, too. Are they throwing out all of these asinine rumors and offers and leaks to try to save this season? Is that why a deal is not getting done? So, I mean, who knows? It could really go either way. But that's my opinion.
Well, I mean, look, we've seen so far, and I'd have to sit here. I could probably, if I go back through my research and my notes, I could probably get an accurate count on it. But I think we have seen at least four proposals from the owners. We have seen three counter proposals from the NHLPA. All right, that's a total of seven proposals that have been put forth. What? They cancel the season, and everybody goes their own merry way. What's going to change? You know, unless...
But that's... You know what? I honestly think canceling the season is going to benefit the fans. It's going to not let them even think about this. Not let them read about this. Not let them get their hopes up every couple of days just to get scraped in the back and let down. I think the only person that's really going to benefit from this is the fan. And
yes,
honestly, that's all I care about right now is because everybody's going insane over this.
Well, it's not going to benefit the fan if, in fact, they don't get something in place by September.
Trust, it's going to benefit the fan mentally if they just cancel the season and hockey fans just get to, you know, relax their minds, stop burning themselves out over listening to all of this stuff and getting their hopes up. That's how they're going to benefit mentally from it.
Yeah, but
it would
be
damage control.
Yeah, basically.
Sure, but you know as well as I do, Jonathan, and I think Jim can attest to this as well because he's in the media and we're kind of in the media as well. It makes no never mind if they cancel the season or not. because the first talk that there are or that there are quote unquote negotiations between Donald Fair and Gary Bettman, it's going to be all over the news.
Well,
so it doesn't make any difference. We're still going to hear about it.
Well, you would have to hope that if this is canceled, that if they have talks, that it won't be, you know, as publicized as it's been, because we're in the middle of what's supposed to be a hockey season. You know what
I
mean?
Mike, to your point, Mike, I would disagree because hockey is, like, covered for, like, 5 seconds on SportsCenter. So, yes.
Well,
what? What's this center thing you're talking about?
Good point, Jim. I hear you. I know. I recognize it is the fourth sport. But nonetheless, you know, we do manage to get information on these proposals
well,
as they're put forth.
You do, but I'll tell you this, if I may throw the NHL under the bus once more, NHL Network has completely dropped the ball on covering this. They haven't done a damn thing when it comes to covering the whole
thing. NHL Network has dropped the ball on covering anything NHL since its existence.
True.
Seriously,
very
man, NHL Network, but you have to, you know, during the trade deadline, you have to steal a feed from TSN?
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Well, they're partially owned by TSN, that's why.
What happened? So,
I believe they're partially owned by TSN.
You know what? They got their own analysts. Put them to work. What are we doing? I don't want to. You know what? They're paying these guys just to speak before games that we have already seen.
I agree. I'd rather see Catherine tapping on my TV any day, twice on Sunday. Hey.
Oh, I see her on my TV every day. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, honestly, man, you know what? You want to talk about channels. I mean, you know what? To me, the only network out there that actually covers their sport from top to bottom, from A to Z, is the MLB Network.
Yeah.
Bingo.
You know?
Yep.
And you know me with MLB. I you know, I have a love-hate relationship with the Major League Baseball. But
yeah, you only like them in the off-season, dude.
Even in the season, their network is the best network out there because they know how to cover their own league.
You're the only guy I know that enjoys Major League Baseball when there's no baseball being played.
All right. That's great.
Hey, I do too.
Yeah, see, Jim does too. See, it's not just me.
I'm still a baby.
There you go.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's
it. He'll never get it. That's okay.
All right, you know what, Jimmy? I'm going to stick on for the last few minutes if you have time, man.
Sure, I can hang, yeah.
Right, because we're going to get from one circus with the NHL into another circus, and we're going to talk New York Jets football here for a couple of minutes.
There you go.
You know, we got a lot of rumors going around. Mike Tannenbaum, he's going to be reassigned within the organization starting Monday. Also, there's rumors going around that it's going to scare off potential GMs because nobody wants to deal with Mike Tannenbaum. We've already heard that teams and other players don't even want to associate with the New York Jets because of Mike Tannenbaum, because of, you know, I could throw out the words that I've heard about Mike Tannenbaum, but I won't because we're, you know, a family-friendly show here.
Thank you.
But now we have this other thing. Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News, which I'm going to debunk right after I read it, though. He said that Rex Ryan said he would welcome a firing if Gangrene fails to make over their offense and fails to basically put money towards their offense. Mm-hmm. Now, Brian Kaz, SNY, Rich Cimini from ESPN New York, and Manish Mehta himself both confirmed that Ryan addressed the team today in a meeting telling the players it's all lies. He wants to be a Jet. He loves it. He's proud to be a Jet. So basically, Mehta threw himself under the bus just now.
Okay.
Pretty funny stuff. But now we have this. McElroy out. He lied about having a concussion. Who starts this weekend? Not Tim Tebow. Mark Sanchez.
Right.
My question for you guys is, what needs to happen for this New York Jets team for them to actually be an effective team again next year and also to save their fans from hearing all the crap from other NFL fans?
Well, Johnson, in my opinion, is you know, you put up the comment the other day, I think it was you, Jonathan, that you put up the comment on Facebook about Tannenbaum being moved. And my question, if you recall, immediately after that was, well, why are you stopping there?
Yeah.
In my opinion, the only thing that's going to change this is if Woody Johnson cleans house.
Yeah.
You got to clean house. General manager, coaching staff, you got to clean house on this.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just going to continue. Just going to continue. This has been, and you say circus. That is a kind word for what the Jets have been this past season.
Well, listen, like I said, we're a family-friendly show, so I can't use the other word I like to use.
Cluster
Go ahead, Jim, weigh in on the Jets.
It's a cluster bleep. See, I censored myself. I'm a kind soul. You know what I mean? But Mike's on.
The lack of nuts,
again.
Right, Jim?
Yeah, oh, thank you very much. Well, I apologize for that. I didn't know the rating issue. speaking of flexing, the Jets, you know, oh my goodness. You're right, Mike. They have to clean house completely from the top down. I'm willing to almost, and I stress this word almost, give Sanchez a slight pass because as bad as a quarterback as he is, no one, and I mean no one, can succeed in this system. It's the system more than the personnel right now. So a new system needs to be implemented. I mean, yeah, do I see Sanchez? I'm not saying Sanchez is the franchise quarterback for this team. He's not. McElroy, again, jury's still out. What it comes down to is it's front office, it's coaching, it's absolute tear it apart and rebuild within,
yeah.
or from the outside as well.
Well, you know what? If you look at the job Mike Tannenbaum did when he first came in, he was kind of riding the coattails a little bit of Terry Bradway.
Yes.
Because Terry Bradway brought in a lot of that, a lot of those players before he even took over the general manager's, manager's position. To me, Mike Tannenbaum basically dismantled what was a good team.
Yep.
I mean, you had two years with the Jets with a rookie quarterback and then a sophomore quarterback. He helped guide them to an AFC championship game both seasons.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that good in your first two seasons with great role players around you, and all of a sudden the next two seasons have all of that taken away from you and then still try to succeed?
Yeah.
You know, so I agree with you, Jim, because to me, this doesn't fall on the shoulders of Mark Sanchez. It falls on the shoulders of the entire organization.
I agree with Jim that and I agree with you as well, Jonathan, that you can't put it on the shoulders of Sanchez.
Wow, we don't hear that often.
Now I will go. I'll also concur with Jim.
Yeah.
Sanchez is serviceable. He's not a franchise quarterback.
No, he's not. But I'm going to tell you this right now. Without a Super Bowl win, Joe Namath was a serviceable quarterback as well.
Agreed. And that was going to be my next point. And that is that you do not, in my opinion, I don't think you need a premier Tom Brady, Peyton Manning quarterback in order to win a Super Bowl. I do not believe that. I think a lot of it, as Jim just pointed out, is system, it's coaching, it's management, okay? It's, as Andy Reid likes to say, putting your players in the right position.
Yeah.
All right? And Rex Ryan is not doing that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let me throw this out there, too. If you look at a Mark Sanchez, you could kind of compare him to a Trent Dilfer.
Yes.
Trent Dilfer, 34-7, kicked the ever-loving crap out of the Giants in that Super Bowl.
Correct.
You know? I mean, so there have been serviceable quarterbacks who can win football games because they have a great team around them.
My point exactly.
And that's what Mark Sanchez had his first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Tannenbaum is really the cause of all of this.
Yeah.
He took away players from Rex Ryan. He took away players from Mark Sanchez. Very good players that these two guys clicked with. And he threw him to the back burner for guys like Santonio Holmes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. And, of course, he's responsible for Tim Tebow even showing up in northern New Jersey, which completely screwed with the team chemistry from Jump Street.
Yes, exactly. You know what? You take these guys off of the team, and you try to replace it with guys who you think are good, but that's other teams are getting rid of because they don't want them, i.e. Santonio Holmes. You know, this guy's coming off of a great Super Bowl win, but yet the Steelers get rid of him. You know, that's a red flag right there. You know, so it's, you know what, who does this fall on? To me, I believe that the entire mess this organization has been in for the last two seasons is all on Mike Tannenbaum.
But unfortunately,
I think you're going to have to clean house now because it's just a mess.
Yeah, obviously, I think if you're going to point a finger, I think obviously you have to go right there. You have to start right there. Ryan certainly hasn't helped situations.
No.
But then Ryan is also, in some respects, kind of a victim of circumstance. I think in some respects it's almost kind of a shame that Ryan came out today, and if, in fact, he did have a team meeting and said, oh, this is all BS, that's almost a shame that he did that. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if I were Rex Ryan, I'd be wanting to quit.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't want to quit because he sees potential with this defense, and that's where it all lies in. And that's what happened with the two, you know, Sanchez's first two seasons was this defense was great. As soon as Rex Ryan came in, he knew how to work with this defense, and you can see the improvements in guys like Muhammad Wilkerson, rookie Quinton Coples, Antonio Cromartie's probably playing, you know, his best football of his career. LaRon Landry making the Pro Bowl, and it's because of Rex Ryan. He's a very good defensive coach, probably the best in the league, Mike. But then you look at the other things. Revis goes down. Other injuries to the defensive unit. The offensive line being in shambles. You know what? You have to look at Mike Tannenbaum there because he does not know how to take players off the scrap heap like other coaches, excuse me, like other GMs do, and put them in as effective players. He does not know how to do it because he's just not a good general manager.
Well, maybe Ryan would be better off as a DC.
Probably. No, listen. I think Ryan could get the job done as a head coach. Unfortunately, you need a very, very good offensive coordinator to work with that offensive, you know, staff if he's going to be that kind of a guy.
But, Jonathan, let me ask you a question. After the past two seasons, okay, yeah, and all the nonsense, the media nonsense, the circus environment that you've brought up numerous times,
yeah,
do you really think that Rex Ryan could be effective with that? With let's just say for a moment that he gets a couple of key positions filled next year on the offense. Let's say. All right?
Yeah.
Do you think that he could still be an effective coach? I'm not sure.
I think so, because we've seen it in his first two seasons with the Jets. He was a very, very effective coach on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, but he's looked like a horse's ass, I'm going to be honest with you, in the past few years.
Well, of course he does. He absolutely does. But then again, look, everything had to go. He's got no running backs, you know. All of a sudden, boom, ground and pound has to go because these guys can't pound his running backs. They're awful.
They have no
the
lead.
Fullbacks,
yeah,
are awful. I mean, listen, they got rid of a very good fullback in Richardson. He wanted to return, but he retired instead because nobody was going to sign him to give John Connor paved the way. All of a sudden, the Terminator. What did they do? They waived him because he was awful. I mean, there's nobody there. Listen, Sanchez can only do so much. With awful running backs, mediocre wide receivers, and one of the worst offensive lines in the game the last two seasons, what is he supposed to do?
Well, no, I hear you. I hear you. I'm just saying, I guess,
but you still have to score a touchdown to win games, Mike.
Sure. I guess my point is if you're going to make the move on Tannenbaum, then you might as well make the move all the way down the line. And I think that just to clean the whole thing
exactly
out.
But you have to look at the, you know, Rex Ryan's four seasons with the Jets, where he started and where he is now. If you look at the moves Mike Tannenbaum made, you could piece that puzzle together and say, well, if Rex Ryan goes bye-bye and Mark Sanchez goes bye-bye, you have to blame all of that on Mike Tannenbaum. And to me, reassigning him in the organization is a mistake. You have to get rid of him completely out of his organization.
Well, that's the same conversation we've had down here in Philadelphia with regard to Andy Reid. Because there have been a lot of conversations about the fact that there's a possibility, at least that's one of the rumors that's been floating around, is that they're going to bump him up to be president of the team for at least 1 year.
No.
Jonathan, let me ask you a quick question, though, before we run out of time here. Rex Ryan, I have a suspicion he's going to be back next year. What's your gut?
I honestly believe he's going to be back next year.
Yeah.
I do believe they need to clean house only because of all the mess that they're in. I do believe he's going to be back. I think he's going to get one more go with it.
So do I.
What do you think, Jim?
I'm on the fence. It's 50-50. All I got to say is Black Monday is going to be fun this year. That's all I agree
with you.
Oh, you know what? I think we're going to have a special two-hour Fan Junkies radio.
We may very well.
Hey, I'm down.
I think you're going to have to.
The only question in Philadelphia is when does the only question that we've been bouncing around down here is what time of day is the press conference? Is it going to be right after the game on Sunday or is it going to be Monday?
12 noon Monday.
There you go.
All right, Jim. Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it, buddy.
A pleasure, guys. Happy New Year in advance.
Happy
you
New
too,
Year
Jim.
As well. All right, great stuff. Well, that's it for our show. We only have a few seconds left, so just got to float a couple of things here. FanJunkies.net. RedHouseSports.net. Don't forget, we're kicking off the new year January 2nd with New York Rangers legend Adam Graves.
Isn't that going to be something?
Great stuff. And we also have, right after Adam Graves, a couple of shows after that, we're going to have director Nate Bellamy joining us to talk about the Renaissance Men documentary. Excuse me, movie about the New York Rens. If you don't know who they are, look them up. Great stuff.
Yep.
We're going to get some basketball history on that episode. We can't wait for it.
Yep.
All right, so thank you once again for listening to another exciting episode of Fan Junkies Radio, and we'll be back Monday. So for Mike McShane, I'm Jonathan Ragus. Have a good day.
Have a good weekend.